You are listening to a UNC Kidney Center podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Falk, the director of the UNC Kidney Center. Our goal today is to help you better understand autoimmune disease, vasculitis, and kidney disease in general. Today, we're joined by a very special guest, Dr. Remy Coteau, who is multiply trained. He is an integrative medicine consultant at the Chapel Hill Integrative Medicine Associates, where he's actually the director. But he has a PhD in epidemiology. He is a certified family practitioner and does a substantial amount of research in health policy kinds of issues. So he is the ideal counterbalance between integrative medicine and all of its facets. Also participating in our discussion today is our patient, Diane, who has vasculitis. And we will be discussing then integrating complementary therapy in the treatment of vasculitis in general and kidney disease in particular. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
I guess maybe the first question that some patients might have is, what is the difference between complementary and integrative medicine and alternative medicine?
I think that's a very important distinction to be made. I appreciate you asking that, because the terms change over time, but the basic idea currently is that there is a modern allopathic medicine, which is the modern medicine that we are used to within medical systems, which are taught in medical school. And then there are alternative or complementary therapies, which are generally approaches to healthcare that are not typically in the mainstream of current modern day medicine. Now, that changes there's a dynamic interface, because as some modalities get incorporated into the mainstream, they no longer are considered complementary or alternative, and new approaches may be introduced. So that's a distinction between allopathic or modern medicine and complementary or alternative medicines. The term integrative medicine is a relatively new term that is becoming more well-defined as time goes on, but for the most part it means, or so I define it, as the thoughtful integration, the thoughtful inclusion of complementary and alternative medical approaches into the medical mainstream healthcare system. That's how I see it.
You are then an integrative physician, if one could use that word.
I am, or I call myself that, and I think it's a reasonable label for my practice at the moment. There are training programs in integrative medicine. There's a very good one in the University of Arizona that trains physicians in integrative medicine. I myself have not done that 2-year training program. But the reason I consider myself and call myself an integrative medicine physician is that I'm working at the interface between allopathic conventional medicine and complementary and alternative approaches, and I'm trying to bridge those various approaches in a careful, thoughtful way, with the idea, with the goal of improving healthcare, that we can and should be considering other approaches to health and healing beyond that which is conventionally just limited to the conventional medicine world.
Are there scientific studies that show integrative medicine is effective?
There are many scientific studies that show a number of individual complementary or alternative practices that show efficacy. And those can be either efficacy compared head-to-head with conventional practices, or as an adjunct to practices. There aren't many studies that have yet looked at integrative medicine per se, because that's actually difficult to define. So I would say absolutely yes to a large number of modalities for a large number of conditions, but it would be specific to each condition and specific to each approach or complementary and alternative medicine approach.
Could you give us an example of a study?
Well, for example, my main area of interest is in headaches. That's how I became interested. So I'm also an acupuncturist, a medical acupuncturist. I'm trained in that area. And I trained in that as I was becoming an investigator in looking at headaches, treatment for chronic daily headache. And I became very interested in acupuncture. And so that's the area that I do most of my work in. And I've completed clinical trials, randomized clinical trials, funded by the NIH of acupuncture for headache. And these are studies, there are a variety of studies, many studies published in JAMA, BMJ, Annals of Internal Medicine, top peer-reviewed journal, that show very clearly, without any question, that acupuncture is highly effective in the treatment of many different types of headache disorders. So that's just one example of many of how a complementary and alternative approach, such as acupuncture, has been very seriously researched and has been published and shown that there is absolute efficacy for certain conditions.
How can vasculitis patients safely integrate traditional and complementary therapies?
So that's where the area is challenging and rewarding and intellectually challenging, because I don't know of any great definitive answers for that. My approach, and the approach that I think makes sense, is to incorporate as many allopathic modern medicine modalities that make sense for a given person, and then to sit down with a trained healthcare professional, a physician maybe other non-physicians, but who understand the condition, understand vasculitis, understand the complication, understand the treatment options, understand the risks and benefits of various modalities, including the medical modalities. And usually that means working very closely with that patient's physicians and healthcare providers. That's very important. If we're interfacing, if we're integrating, if we're really looking at different approaches, we need to work as a team. And so starting with that basis, we then consider options that might be helpful, and we try to the best of our ability to do risk-benefit assessments. But many times we just don't have the data that's necessary. Like, for example, Chinese herbal therapies, which have been shown to be very effective. We don't know. I don't know, and I don't think anybody really knows, the real risks in terms of synergistic effects with the medicines and such. So there's a lot of unknown territory. But it doesn't mean that we can't go there closely and closely watched and thoughtfully.
So most of our patients, whether they have vasculitis or they have kidney disease, are on a whole host of typical medications, mm-hmm. typically medicines that suppress the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
How do we work then with somebody who's interested in herbal or other kinds of medications that one would take by mouth? Mm-hmm. How do we figure out whether side effects, for example, are really attributable to FDA-approved medications mm-hmm. when compared to, for example, to a Chinese herb?
Mm-hmm. Well, most of the time we're in somewhat uncharted territory. Now, what I mean by that is that we cannot point to clinical trials to look at the side effect profiles of any combination of medications and herbs, because they just haven't been done. And so if we work together as a team with the patient and the healthcare providers to try some approaches that have been used in other cultures and other traditions that with some efficacy, and we incorporate that as an adjunct to medical care, we'll never know, or we may not know if there are side effects or if there is efficacy, what to attribute it to. We don't know unless we do controlled studies. But in the absence of those controlled studies, what I think is reasonable to do is, with real clear informed partnerships, to go carefully and to monitor and to make decisions. There's really these kind of N of one trials, if you will, or just one person going through the experience, and that we apply clinical judgment. And that's what I mean by uncharted territory, is that we can't rely on a number of different studies to tell us what to expect, but we can still do things relatively safely with potentially good and better outcomes, but it's every patient is different.
So there are times when I learn that patients are on specific herbs or mm-hmm. herbal groups, and I must admit it gives me a certain amount of pause mm-hmm. as a typical American-trained physician.
Yes.
Because I'm not sure what the mm-hmm. potential interactions or side effects are. Are there things that we do as American physicians that would give you pause as you are prescribing a different form of complementary therapy?
Great question. I share that, I think, probably almost identical feeling that you just expressed there as a physician. I personally don't prescribe many herbs, or I don't prescribe any herbs, actually, because I'm not I don't have that content expertise. So I also give pause to people who are taking a number of different by-mouth substances that I don't really understand. Now, I do, however, work with people who do have that knowledge. Dr. Wenyuan Chen, whom you just talked to, is one of such people who is a very highly trained nephrologist, who is a very good clinician, who understands both worlds. I basically trust his clinical judgment and make those decisions, and because he, in one person, resides the knowledge of both disciplines. We don't have that many people yet who have that that ability. Over time, we'll train more physicians who have a knowledge about alternative medicine, and over time, we'll get to there. But right now, we have to rely on more than one person working on there. So I give pause to ask your question about, are there things that we do that gives me pause in allopathic medicine? Many. In fact, much of what we do gives me pause. I feel over the past 10 years, as I've been looking at these various traditional healing systems while practicing my trade, I have become more cognizant of how we have to be careful with our own practices, that there are many things that we don't fully understand. And just because it's FDA approved doesn't give us a blank check for just prescribing it and expecting patients to adhere to exactly what we're saying. There's much that's unknown. So what I have come to believe is that we should try non-pharmacological approaches, less interventional approaches, as much as possible. That's my own bias that has developed over time.
I completely agree with that concept, especially when you don't know the cause of a disease. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to know, other than empirically N of one or in controlled trials, whether something is working or not.
We've talked largely about medicines and herbs, but there's a whole range of healing modalities that are not pharmacological. Now, I consider herbs and supplements pharmacological. They're substances that we ingest, and they're chemical. They're not that different from medicines in many ways. But there are a whole number of healing approaches that lie outside of the pharmacological approaches, which lie within the complementary and alternative medicine realms, that are underutilized, to say the least, in our medical system. Stress management, stress reduction, stress management. That should be more part of our daily life. Daily life choices, ways of life, ways of thinking, ways of reacting to the world. So mind-body type things is what I'm referring to. But also there's a whole area of healing modalities which can be considered energetic kind of modalities, such as acupuncture is a good example of one. And so that's one that I happen to know more about that I think is also underutilized in our system, because there are a number of fairly safe approaches. Acupuncture is relatively safe. Even though it's an intervention, you're poking people with needles, it sounds like it's really pretty scary, but it's really quite safe. That the number of complications is extremely, extremely low, the rate of complications. And yet there seems to be a invoking of a healing response that seems to happen. So however we can get the body to invoke a healing response, we should try.
Yeah. I mean, therapeutic massage,
for example,
must similarly work. Interestingly, you are maybe too young to recall, there was an era in most American hospitals where nurses or nurses' aides typically did therapeutic massage, but then that practice dissipated because of the forces of the economy, so that those practices were no longer provided.
Because the healthcare system isn't paying for them. That drives a lot
That's
of...
Exactly.
So you mentioned massage, you mentioned meditation or stress reduction. Are there practices that most patients should consider incorporating into their therapeutic regime?
There is one that I'm learning more about that I would like to see more prevalent in the United States. I just returned a few days ago from a 10-day trip to India. And the reason I went there was to learn more about Ayurvedic medicine, which is the traditional medicine of the traditional healing medical system of India. It's thousands of years old and been practiced somewhat consistently during that time. And I went there to learn about what that is about and how they practice it. And Dr. Falk knows that I myself am a kidney patient. I've had a lifelong history of kidney issues, proteinuria and hematuria, and high blood pressure, all of those related to some sort of kidney process. So in that 10-day course, I was offered to be evaluated and treated by their approach. And I gave myself to that. I said, let's try. So I had the whole process. I was evaluated, a very extensive evaluation. They gave me a diagnosis, which had to do with a mismatch between my constitution and where I am now in terms of what kind of activities and stress and things that are in my life.
I'm sure that's a correct diagnosis.
It rang true.
Yeah, sure.
And so in terms of answering your question, Diane, about other modalities, this was new to me. It was not similar to traditional Chinese medicine, which I'm familiar with. So I can understand the basic concepts that we are who we are, and there are certain things that we do or that are done to us that are not necessarily right for us. Might be right for somebody, but not for us. That's the basic idea. So what they did is they did a combination of massage therapies, oil massage and medicated herbs, and also lifestyle changes. They told me things about, like, not to drink cold water, and not necessarily drink quite as much as I was, and not to overly exert myself, and to really decrease the amount of they call it vata, part of that's too driven, too, you know, and to be in the society, modern society, you often have to kind of work hard and all. That rang true to me. So for the past 10 days, I have been engaging in slightly different activities. I try to slow down a little bit. I try to drink warm water instead of cold water. I'm trying to be cognizant of the stress level and how I manage that. And in those 10 days, I assure you that I have had very different, very positive responses. I feel different. That very basic principle, one doesn't need an Ayurvedic doctor necessarily to do that. These are very basic principles, but they're not ones that we tend to apply very much. So I think I would answer your question by saying, yes, we should all of us, go back to some basics and not necessarily look at healthcare as an intervention that is done unto us, but to really broaden a bit of our view of our interactions with the world. Learn a little bit more about who we are and make decisions that are a little bit more fitting to ourselves.
Your mother probably told you that too, though.
She did because she really is very wise. But I don't think I know that I haven't practiced it to the extent to which I would benefit from practicing. So I actually needed the intervention, if you will. I kind of needed to be, you know, seen by a doctor and treated to own that approach and then to take the discipline to start applying it. And I've got a long ways to go to really apply it long term, but I'm starting and I'm making that effort.
You know, patients are often reluctant to tell their doctors that they're doing some of these practices and just to talk it over with him or her. Is this something that patients should do?
Well, I would say yes, but it's difficult. It's difficult for the doctors. It's difficult for the patient. In my view, a good medical encounter, a good counter between an encounter with a patient and a doctor is one where there's certainly trust and there's a openness of communication and as much relevant information as can be shared. But there's limited time. And so any one thing that we do in a patient-doctor encounter relationship is at the expense of something else. So yes, unqualified, I would say, it's generally a good idea for the patient and the doctor to have as much general information that is relevant. And what one is doing and what one is taking in terms of medicines and herbs, yes, I think that that's very relevant because it's part of what we're doing and it may be really interacting or helping and you need to take that into account. The reason I say but and hesitate is because most of us as doctors don't really know yet what to do with that information. It's still an area that's relatively new for many of us. Not all of us. There's many physicians who are understanding more and more who are taking the time. But I can't go to my colleagues and expect them to learn about all this because we can't. We can't. Not all of us can go and learn about all these different modalities or learn about all these herbs. I mean, I have made a point of developing a career in integrative medicine, and I have very little understanding of herbal treatments because I haven't focused on that. So I would say yes. But we're not really at a place yet where I don't know that we can make really good use of that information yet.
So do you see every individual who you see as a candidate for these other kinds of therapies?
I think that's probably a fair statement. I mean, I think we're all candidates. And I'm thinking of it as we are all candidates for choosing the right approaches to our health and healthcare. And anything is fair game as long as it seems safe and reasonable. So I would say yes. Does that answer your question?
Probably, but it's also a question of self-efficacy.
Mm-hmm.
There are all sorts of studies of self-efficacious behavior. What you're really asking for is for individuals to seek out any number of kinds of behaviors or therapies that make them feel better, become better at taking care of their own bodies and their own minds. I think what Diane was suggesting was that there is a fear of patients who do this kind of alternative or complementary medicine not to want to integrate it with their usual medical provider for fear or out of concern that that bit of information will be met with a sense of distrust of whatever is being done or the admonition not to do it. So there is, I think what Diane is expressing, the worry that there is lack of integration of these approaches.
And I would, all that I think I would agree with, but I would say that times are changing very rapidly and that many physicians are changing their philosophy and they're much more willing to, at the very minimum, acknowledge respectfully that a patient is doing things that is outside of exactly what they've told them to do. That's become common knowledge, and I think there's an acceptance of that. You're going to say.
Oh, that's absolutely right. I mean, the other reality is having taken care of vasculitic patients for over a quarter of a century, I know that I still don't know the cause of the disease, and all of the things that we're doing are of some benefit. But there is a wide space of other kinds of things that need to be done that I'm sure are beneficial for patients. The question is still remains the best way of the communication process between patient, physician, complementary kinds of therapies.
Right. I very, very well said.
I mean, I think, you know, we have a disease that we don't know what causes it. The treatments are not great. I mean, yes, they work, but your, you know, quality of life is not terrific. And so I think some patients think, why not? you know, why not try some of this stuff? And I think what I'm looking for is guidance as to the, you know, what would be good to try, what would enhance quality of life.
And that's exactly where I think integrative medicine, specifically integrative medicine, has a role to play. Because the premise, as I see it, of integrative medicine is that a person, a patient, has a role to play in their own healthcare, and that there are that person has his or her own set of priorities and goals and fears and concerns and desires that may not match standard of care as defined by Western medicine. Where I see integrative medicine working is to try to give guidance to somebody who is in situations like we all are at various times of our life, and to make the best decisions for ourselves with professional guidance. That's where I see the role of integrative medicine being there, because it's very difficult for us to do that as physicians in our own world. So I have the luxury, as an integrative medicine person, who people are coming to see me for that, to be able to focus on that. I didn't really have that luxury as a practicing family physician when I had a lot of other responsibilities that I had to attend to. So until we have, and we may never really have, a system where one healthcare provider can meet all the needs of a patient, we may never get there. That may not even be an ideal. What we have now is we have very good conventional medicine that does what it does fairly well, quite well, does some other things that it doesn't do very well, not very well, and some other areas that are completely outside of their scope. And yet patients are wanting more than what's just there. That's where I think the patient should be as informed and as engaged and as much of an advocate for herself or himself as possible. And they may need some guidance from people like me who are trying to bridge these and trying to avoid the person from having to go blindly try this and try that and try all these different modalities. Because I think ultimately most of us don't need that much. There are a few things that, you know, if we're perfectly healthy, great. Just keep with your good health style.
So last but not least, how do you find people like you? Because in fact, you're a rare bird, if I may use that as a description. What would you suggest to somebody who is not living in this kind of environment? How practically do they find somebody who is competent in integrative kinds of therapies?
Well, I think the good news is that there are more and more people who, more and more healthcare providers, physicians and others, who are really taking the time to train and to learn more about that. So there are more and more people who are becoming available, who are trained through this program in Arizona by Dr. Andy Weil and other programs. And there are more and more people kind of from within physicians and healthcare providers who are interested in one area. They may be interested in yoga, or they may be interested in stress reduction, or they may be interested in acupuncture. So we're growing our mindset. But in the end, you're right. There are very few people, there aren't very many people like me who's really carved out a part of my career to say, I'm an integrated medicine physician. I just want to help guide you and try to bridge those worlds. There aren't that many. But there's a lot of information available to people without coming to go see a specialist. These podcasts, for example, it's a great example, really, of information like this. There are websites that are very useful, drweil.com, drweil.com, the integrative medicine industry, if you will. Good information there. It takes effort. It takes time. But then it's just a matter of for the patient to really use her or his sense of what seems right and get the best guidance that they can. I don't know if that helps.
That's perfect. I want to thank both of you for spending time with us. Thank you so much to each and every one of those people who participated today. Thank you very much.